Hello, this is the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we discuss the big political stories of the moment. I'm Mike Siluma, and thanks for joining us. One of the most important features of the forthcoming elections is the introduction of independent candidates in a provincial and national system where previously only political parties could contest. Which is why in this episode of the Politics Weekly, we invited one of the independents, Anele Mda, to join us and share her perspectives with us. She's contesting, of course, for a seat in the National Assembly.
You asked Mr. Ramaphosa to sit down first. I'm standing.
Now I warn you.
I need to put on my big girl panties and keep going.
You can't have two speakers standing at the same time.
Security services of the Republic of South Africa, you may intervene.
There's been several attempts on my life.
Lower that hand.
It's not alarm.
The president is accused of serious crimes.
I know I'm going to become the president of this country.
You are going to be the president.
I am going to be the president
of South Africa.
Of South Africa. There's no confusion.
Of South Africa.
I will cancel race.
Corrupt people do not eat alone. They have a spider web.
I'm there. I can lead them. I'm ready to be the president of this country.
I now suspend the proceedings. I have warned you.
Thanks for your time, Sisanet.
Thank you so much, but Mike, and good afternoon or good day or good morning, depending where your listeners will be listening from.
But as we get into our conversation, I'd like to play this clip for you, and then it'll kick us off.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, the IEC officials and the board and everyone else that is here, I greet you all this afternoon. Where is my photo, IEC? No, I can't. No. The one that is registered to be on the ballot. People are not going to see this on the ballot. Where is my photo? The other political parties have been having their banners there. I mean, their logos. Where is my photo? I was asked to send a photo that is going to be on the ballot, and I did. Where is it? No, but it must be reflected here. People are not going to vote for an empty space when they are voting for me. They are going to vote for a person. I am campaigning as an individual. Where is my photo? I was requested to send a photo and I duly complied. I was asked twice. I never complained. I complied. Where is my photo?
What was going on there? You know, when you started talking, you could cut the atmosphere with a knife. I think there was a lot of, it was kind of like jarring moments to a happy occasion.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
What was going on?
I think the first thing, Bramike, is that was such an august occasion. And not just august by the level where it was pitched, but it was august also in the nature of how historic it is. Because this was the very all-important code of conduct signing ceremony at a national level for all political parties that are duly gazetted and independent candidates that are gazetted to participate in these upcoming national elections. And as you know, independent candidates are participating at these national elections for the very first time ever. How on earth was it even conceivable that IEC could imagine that it would be correct that they fully apply themselves consciously and they are aware and they are up to so much full presence of the mind when they are preparing the segment that involves political parties, both old and new for that matter. And when you come to the aspect that is very important, that the aspect that is historical about these elections, the coming of the newcomers, the people who are the change makers, the people who bring a different segment and element about the all importance of the maturing of our democracy 30 years after we attained it, you decide that you're going to lower the bar. You decide that you're going to drop it. And you're not just going to drop it. You're going to drop it so disrespectfully. You're not even going to see us. You're going to deface us. You're going to push us to the periphery. You're going to act like we are not there. Because I was called on stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm called after good. GUT is the last political party, right? Then I'm the first independent candidate. Leave out that I could be the first because my name starts with an A. Maybe alphabetically, it was designed that I would be the first. And you call me and then you walk to your seat with that nerve of not saying anything. And my photo is not reflecting at the backdrop where consistently since we started at 10 o'clock, all political party identity or logos were reflected there. You don't see it needed that you must offer me an upfront apology or an explanation, or you must make a generic explanation to the whole entire event so that you just lay the issue aside for all independents.
Yeah.
So my standing firmly on that day, it was not really because I wanted to make a statement for Anele. It would have been cowardice of me to have allowed IEC to do what they wanted to do to me, because I would have put my fellow independent candidates at a very shaky ground, because I would have been the first person and I would have okayed that nonsense. And no one else was going to have the courage to come back and say, no, we demand better. And for me, it was important that I standing up for myself and my fellow independent candidates. But also it was time that we really begin to express it live. What do we mean when you say we need accountable people?
Yeah, because another person might have decided, this is an important occasion, public occasion, and chosen to raise the issue after the fact or privately, to say, I really didn't really like
it. It was not to be.
Because,
it was not to be, not for me, and
even,
not
even
at
if
this
it
time.
Embarrassed the IEC, because there was a lot of embarrassment there, a lot of embarrassed faces there.
They really got embarrassed. And I must say, they were embarrassed by their own misfortunes. They caused that embarrassment to themselves. And you know how they even they furthered that embarrassment? It was by their steadfast of thinking that they were going to sit the way they did. And they thought that ultimately, because they were steadfast in sitting, I was also going to give in. I was never going to give in. I'm not the type. Once I get into the ring, we have to settle.
There has to be an outcome.
Listen. It can't be a tie. Someone must bow and someone must emerge one way or the other.
Yeah.
On that day, I was an all-important occasion guest. And I was going to be treated with the manner that the other guests that were treated before me were accorded. So there was no way I was going to lower the bar and lower it with my name.
Mm. Okay, now tell us about yourself.
All right.
Home is where? I take it that the person that you are was molded by a home, a community, a people.
True.
Where is that?
I was born in Bizana. Bizana is a beautiful small town, underdeveloped currently, thanks to the Messi ANC. Small, beautiful town off Bizana in the Eastern Cape. That is where I was born. And I was born in a household, in a family of politicians, activists, academics, you name it, business people, whatever you can think of. And it sounds like I was born from a family that was, big and well-to-do. Yes, it was. But I went to grow up in Flagstaff at my grandmother's home, Holy Cross. There's a hospital, a missionary hospital that was built way back. It's called Holy Cross Hospital. So our village is not far from Holy Cross Hospital. That's where I grew up. Was brought up by an awesome quintessential queen, my grandmother, Noma Tolo. She passed away on the 27th of December in 2020. The person who sent me to grow up in Flagstaff was my grandfather, Caledon Sizakele Mda. He's a man who introduced me to politics. He is the man who made me to experience the brutality of the Boers and the apartheid police force, how they were treating people and black leaders at the time. Because I think at the age of 4 or 5, when they used to come at night and whatever time to raid our home in Bizana in town where my grandfather had a house. He still has that house even now. And most of the time he used to climb up the ladder and go sleep up in the ceiling board because that was as an escape, you know. And he was a man who worked closely with the late President Oliver Tambo. Mm-hmm. And is a person who also, through him, I got to get exposed to Umakhuluweni at a very young age. And my relation with her.
Winnie, you corrected me. Winnie
Madikizela. Umakhuluweni Madikizela. And we end there.
Mm-hmm.
We end
mm-hmm.
there.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll come back and explain why we end there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the person who introduced me, who brought me into politics. And, you know, my grandfather intentionally molded me into a leader at a very young age. I mean, he used to bring me newspaper cuttings specifically on political issues, mm-hmm. and he would make me read those. He used to take me with him when he's going to political meetings. Most political meetings around the area were held in forests, were held in churches to disguise. Mm.
This is around when that we're talking?
We're talking around 84, 85, 86, around there. And I mean, during those times.
This is at the height of
absolutely, absolutely.
Of the uprisings, the long uprisings.
The very raw brutality at the time, you know. So it was extremely the peak of it all, as you know. Mm. So I think when my grandfather then used to go, because he used to even have those cassettes that used to be brought to with the message that comes from the leadership in exile to transfer, convene big gatherings of comrades, obviously in a disguised manner, where they will then play the message from the president. What is the leadership message now saying? What is the next course of action? What is the course of the struggle that must be pursued now? What angle must be used? You know, all those tactics that they used to bring on board and maybe sometimes announcing that we are likely to be getting some assistance and some friends of the ANC somewhere. We are going to try and bring many weapons for comrades to be able to retaliate properly in an informed manner and this, that, and the other. So my grandfather was amongst those people who were responsible for that cascading of information to people.
So in a sense, you could be called a child of the ANC.
I am. I am. And unapologetically so. Mm. And there is nothing about who I am politically in my DNA that is not about the ANC. Mm. That is why I never disown the ANC. Mm. I can never at any point begin to imagine that I am who Anele has become outside of what the ANC did. I am a product of a progressive politics of the ANC that were about an intentional shaping of the next layer of leadership that must emerge, understanding the true struggle of the people and underpinned on the correct principles that, depict what the struggle and the course of the struggle that many leaders were involved and engaged on was about.
Yeah. And your active and conscious engagement, you know, with politics. It starts where?
It actually starts...
Where you make an active choice.
It starts in high school. It starts when I'm in Port St. John's High School. In high school, that's when I joined school-related political movements, right? In high school we were with courses, right? But before that, I was in the community, not ANC branches at that time because they were not branches, right? Mm-hmm. But it was your underground disguised branches, you know, of the ANC. We were Amavulandlela, right?
Yeah. And which looked like youth groups
absolutely.
Or church groups.
Yes.
Or something.
And that was when I was already 12 years old. Right. So I would say my political activism started when I was between the ages of 12 and 13, because in the Amavulandlela programs, that's where, for instance, we'll be taken to Umkhabulo, we'll be taken to Iposberats, we'll be taken to various sessions where we'll be given books to read on the Abasebenzi, Umkhabulo, and the different papers that maybe would be circulating underground that way to continue shaping the discourse and us understanding the politics heats of the day. So that time I was around 13, 14, 15. But then when I got into high school, that's when I think my coming out of now the choice that I could make myself, that was when I was age 17. Mm-hmm. And I was politically, I was out and politically active now. And I was in the ANC branch and also in the ANC Youth League branch. And then at school, I joined courses, and then I ultimately became the president of the SRC at Port St. John's High. And in the region, in the then Limpopo region, which was Port St. John's, Ngqeleni and Limpopo, I became the secretary general of the region of courses. And that was the time I knew that I'm deep in politics, and I think the passion for it was really driven by, a conscious covenant that I made when I was younger, experiencing the brutality that my grandfather used to suffer at the hands of the erstwhile police force, where I said to myself, one day I'll grow old, and when I grow old, I will take revenge for my grandfather. And I think at the core of that was a clear understanding of the fact that my people were under siege.
Okay.
And them being under siege, I was seeing that through what was being done to my grandfather.
Yeah, yeah.
But also I got the enlightenment of understanding the racial dynamics that were at play at that time, you know?
Yeah. Now after high school, then your journey takes you where?
After high school, mind you, like I say to you, I come from a well-to-do family, but I'm not well-to-do myself, right? I'm raised by a principal, but she's not with resources, you know? It was those in rural areas, you could be a teacher and you are almost a high status, but effectively there's nothing status
in the greater scheme,
in the greater scheme of things, right?
Yeah.
So I'm brought up by a woman who is really overstretched financially, because umakulwam used to, like, she used to detest anything where a child could be found to have to be alone on the basis of being an orphan, or in our village, no household was ever going to be headed by a child in her presence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some point in my home, I think we're about 19, we used to be fed from a dish. If you were able to snatch once, that's it. You are not going to have a second chance, because the dishes, the food is gone.
All over. Yeah,
because you are almost what? You are almost 20.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the only meal that you're having.
Yeah.
Maybe around 10, you may have the next meal around 17 hours.
Yeah.
So she was that person. And she was not just looking after those people with a minimal attention. She was giving everything to all of us in an equal scale. So I was not having the benefit and privilege of going to varsity. And I knew she was not going to have money.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that my journey with her was going to end at grade 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to have some form of presence of, futuristically, what will happen? And I was not going to burden that. I was not going to put that on her, because I am seeing a woman who is a single woman who runs so many households under the Mda household. But over and above that, she's playing such a pivotal role in our community, ensuring that she parents, she gives shelter, she gives warmth and love and this, that, and the other. Her teaching was just a profession, but out of that, she was called in some way, right? Mm-hmm. So my journey from high school, luckily for me, by the time I was 17, I had established an NGO, which is Creative Young Women and Growing Girls Group. It was aimed at, building some form of a platform for young girls to be able to have a safe space where they're able to share so many issues that affect girl children, which maybe in our families, there's no safe space to talk about. I mean, you know, as Black communities, we come from very conservative spaces where there's so many things that are not spoken about. I mean, when you're a girl child from a Black community, your first time seeing your periods, you don't know what happens. I mean, with me, I experienced that. I remember I went behind a rendezvous where we used to stay, and I went to pee. And then I was like, when I'm lifting my panty, I'm like, what blood is this? Like, and I screamed, I ran to the house and I was crying. And just as I was about to enter the house, my mind came back. I'm going to my grandmother to tell her that I've got blood. Definitely there's something that I've done wrong. So I can't go and report myself because I'm going to get a hell of a beating. Mm. So can you imagine the traumatic, awakening of such things? And you don't know how to deal with them. And in the household, there is no environment that enables you to cough out such things in a manner that says you don't have to first penalize or punish yourself. There's nothing.
But let me ask you this while you're about that. Do you think the situation would have changed for most young girls today?
Look, I do believe that, honestly, the old way of parenting was great. And I don't think we should want to dilute it by wanting to transfer things that we anticipate could have, because we don't have surety for, a guaranteed surety about that. But I do believe that maybe the absence of our mothers, not the grandparents, because that was not the role of the grandparents.
Yeah. Mm.
The absence of our mothers is where we should frown, or we should frown on all those things, not to the grandparents, because the grandparents were really coming into the middle and being interventioning hand to ensure that Anele is molded, Anele is led, Anele is guided. Where is the mother? Because that's the person who's supposed to assume all that responsibility.
But when you're saying the old way, what are you referring to? For example,
I'm referring to the progressive conservation, conservative aspect of parenting was great.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe that the excessive exposure of children on things that are not age appropriate is good, because you can see in our generation, it's rather turning children into what? You put your word and the child said, but would you dare do those things back in the days?
Mm.
Back in the days, you used to know that the line of respect, when, for instance, a person is talking, a parent, an elderly is talking, it doesn't have to be your mother, your grandmother, your father, any person who's an elderly is deserving of respect from you, right?
Yeah.
And you didn't have to choose whether to or not. It was mandatory. And we were very respectful to that, because I think more than anything, it was also understanding that respecting Put Mike is also my way of respecting my grandmother, even in her absence. Mm. So when Put Mike comes across my grandmother, Put Mike will be like, oh, by the way, one day I bumped to Anel. What a pleasant child.
Mm.
I was carrying plastics. I was coming out of a taxi. She grabbed them, one patisa, and we walked. And I want to commend you for bringing up such an orderly child. So I do not want to believe that the old way, as conservative as we can say it is, you know, this collaborative parenting that is being done today, the one of no consult, no check, no their feelings. Where do feelings come in when I'm parenting? Because parenting is an obligation, is not a discussion where we must reach an agreement. But parents of today want to be in agreement with their children on whether I should do this. Thank God I'm not that kind of a parent.
The parent must always be the adult in the room.
The parent must be a leader. Unless you do not believe in your leadership, or your leadership is questionable, you will seek a collaborative, consultative approach. But when you know that your leadership can stand the test of time, you will stand there firm. When you need to say no, you will. When you need to slap, you will slap. Even if a person can talk about the constitution, you will slap because you are nurturing. And you will not call my slapping violence because you will distinguish between discipline and violence. There can never be something that is between a child and a parent that is called violence until we're able to say there is no objective intention of instilling discipline here with a purpose of bringing up someone
but
in a better way.
But of course, there have to be limits as to
absolutely.
How much, you know,
but I'm not going to have a child. I'm not going to have a child telling me about limits. I'm not going to have a child telling me about limits because that's where we lose it, Mike.
Yeah.
We want to enter into an agreement of, is it okay You can't discipline in consultation. You can never discipline in consultation. In disciplining, you put yourself and say, if I were a child and I would have done wrong to an elderly, what would be the consequences? Okay. And you unleash. That's it.
And you know, now let's transport ourselves into your active political life now.
That's right.
You know, looking at your history, your political history, you're in the ANC, and then you went to COPE.
Yes.
And then you were telling me that you then reversed into the ANC.
That's right.
In a sense.
Yeah.
What was going on there? Let's start with your move from the ANC to COPE.
All right. The move from the ANC to us forming COPE. Remember, I didn't join COPE. I was amongst the founding leaders of COPE.
Yeah.
The move for us to move from the ANC to form COPE is necessitated after the decision of the NEC to recall the president of the republic. Without even
just Thabo Mbeki here,
that's right. Without even beginning to engage the citizens. Remember, the president of the country is not a president of a party. Whether at that time in his respective party he holds a particular position or not, that's immaterial. We are now focusing in the country. So there is no president of a country that can just be removed as a result of intra-party disagreements and factional interests. Because our country is not part and parcel of factions that are happening in any party. So it cannot be that the South Africa, the country, can then be made to be a victim of such occurrence without citizens. I mean, this whole fiasco is taking place so far and distant from the people that are going to bear direct consequences. Is that correct? No, it's not. And not just that it's not correct. The question is, what is it about his leadership and performance in government that warrants what is being done? And if there is a need for it, if you believe in the correctness of your decision to recall the president, why can't you test it by going to South Africans? Why are you not engaging the citizens and get them to okay? Because you know that your decision or your view will stand the test of time. Take it to the people so that the people can say you are indeed correct, because you will put substantial valuable issues that you will advance that will make sense to say this man is a threat to our country, and him remaining at the helm and at the highest land of our office of the office in this country is not to our interest in this manner, and you outline why can't you do that?
But so, might they not have said there's no mechanism for doing that?
Exactly the point, which was then the reason why it was clear to us that should we allow this unprecedented travesty kind of a leadership to continue and not be challenged and there be no display of disgruntlement from within the citizens of South Africa, we would have let ourselves down. We would have okayed. If we would have done that, Zuma would not have dilly-dallied for the many weeks that he dilly-dallied after he was told, get out of the office. He would not. Because it would have been, though, it's correct when the ANC needs to recall, it must just do as it pleases.
Yeah.
It, whether it affects the citizens or it doesn't, it would be of no material effect to the people. Yeah.
So I'm trying to save us time because we've still got a bit of ground to cover.
Yeah.
You're a founding member of COPE, and then you go back to the ANC. What caused that?
We go to parliament, we become members of parliament. Mind you, becoming members of parliament, we are no longer serving COPE, we are serving the people of South Africa. But we are in parliament to serve the voters who believed in us, right? And who gave us a chance. But instead of us being fully present to the needs of the people of South Africa who sent us to parliament, COPE is busy on a leadership tussle for a whole entire 2.5 years. So much so that COPE is in court, absent in the national landscape of politics. Current issues are moving. The voice of COPE is nowhere because COPE is entangled on egoistic issues that are about two men who none of them is willing to bow and say the will of the people must emerge. We are rather prepared to kill an idea that was, that was warmly received by the people of South Africa and who did not just receive it, but who believed so much in it. And I felt it would be disservice of me to continue being in parliament, enjoying the perks and benefits that came with it, whilst I was not able to fully discharge my responsibilities and be able to go to communities and constituencies, do my work as a member of parliament, and I'm able to discharge those and ensure that on each day when I rise in parliament and speak, there's a community that I'm representing. And when I felt that I was not able to do so, it was futile of me to be in parliament because I would have stayed for the full term just so I can be able to attain the many benefits that comes with being in parliament, including the high pensions that you come with, the high gratuity that you get, the endless flight tickets that you get from SAA and all those things. And that for me was not worth the sacrifice of the people that made me to be in parliament. Okay. So I felt I should leave that space so that I can demonstrate my honesty to the people of South Africa. And that honesty, if it meant I needed to leave the gravy train, I should be out. And I turned out my resignation.
Mm-hmm. And then you went back to the ANC. And that's then what you left the ANC. What made you leave again?
I went back to the ANC. But upon coming back to the ANC for the second time, I really did not play any active role. And I think going back was really I think it was more of going back to what I know. It's like when you got married and then you divorce, you go back to your home, right?
Yeah.
So it was more like, this is the only place I know I belong to, right? In the political spectrum. And I was not to shop for a political party because I was not looking. I didn't leave the ANC because I was looking for a political party. Hence, I did not join one.
Yeah.
I helped to establish one, right? Mm-hmm. So going back was more rather walking back into a closet, which I belong into.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, that was still with my intentional individual reflection and assessing of the environment. And the reality was that the rot that I had observed was still there, and I was not going to align with it. Hence, the decision to pull out and be at the back seat and not play any active role, ultimately exiting the space.
Okay. And now you are campaigning to go back to parliament.
That's right.
Okay. How does one characterize you as a candidate? In other words, are you a woman candidate? Are you a youth candidate? Who are you appealing to? Who in your mind's eye, who are you seeing as your constituency, as it were?
Look, I'm a leader in South Africa, right? And I'm not a leader of a particular season. Neither am I a leader of a particular group or sector. I'm a leader that's full stop. People who resonate with my leadership are old men who are inspired by the awakening of a vibrant young voice of a woman who understands that the attainment of this democracy ought to see the continuous breeding of leadership in the manner that the likes of Anele will emerge, right? People who resonate with my leadership are women, old women, who resonated with the 1956 cohort of women who have given up in thinking that there can ever be an emerging of a new, vibrant, honest women of integrity who are willing to serve and who are willing to carry the spear and hold it on the sharp side without having to be under the shield of men in politics. But there's also a group of people who resonate with my leadership, who are young men and young women, who see me cut from a cloth that they would want to use when they say tomorrow, South Africa is calling for a rise of new leaders. When they look at me, they say, we see Usis Anele. We do resonate with what she stands for. But also, we are encouraged and motivated ourselves to use this kind of activism that is not party aligned, that is not conformist, but rather objectively about the progressive pursuit of an ideology that requires a constant, sober awakening of leaders who must rise in our country.
Mm-hmm. There we were talking, offline,
right.
about your approach to things.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you look at, for example, how you dealt with the IEC episode,
yes.
You know, if you are unhappy in that party, things are not going well, you leave, kind of thing. And I was asking you that if you are a politician, people expect you to conform.
Yeah.
You know, you are in a political party, you listen to the party leadership and you follow. Some leaders even say, I listen to the membership.
Yeah.
You know, with a collective or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you've been in the ANC,
yes,
kind of thing to say,
no,
the leader can't do things because, you know, even if they know what's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, and you then, is that why you decided to become an independent? That you don't want to conform to party?
I think it's a combination of I think it's a combination of factors. Amongst those is that I don't want my honesty to ever be taken away from me, because I believe that a leader must be tested by her or his ability to stand on the truth, even when odds are against them. That's my measure of a leader.
Yeah.
And that's how I want to be measured. Hence, I have put myself in this public space for scrutiny. Will Anela stand the heat that comes with standing on that pedestal that she wants to go to? Will she be able not to bow to political pressures? Will she not get co-opted to dubious agendas? Will she not get into parliament? And after that, we see her jumping ship and becoming something that she said she was never going to be. And that's how I was shaped by the people who made me the leader that I am. That's how I grew up seeing leaders. My grandfather used to say, the test of a leader is through an integrity that never has a price on it at all material times. And I've never seen my grandfather, vacillating on issues. I've never seen him doing that.
Mm.
My grandmother equally. She has always been a stern, firm, upfront person. And that's exactly who I am.
Mm.
And in political parties, imagine having to sit in the ANC in this day and age and lie and say there's a good story to tell. What good story to tell?
Mm.
Imagine being in the DA and sit there and lie and say, no, there's a whole intentional embrace of Africans in the DA, progressively and objectively, for them to accumulate leadership skills and also emerge in these leadership positions to lead, not in a token form, but to lead as independent leaders that are given space. When you are lying, there's no such a thing. Imagine me going to an EFF where I'm going to be led by a demagogue that does not respect any woman leader, a person who once denigrated publicly and vilified a woman and called her a tea girl because he could not match the intellectual zeal of Lindiwe Mazibuko at the time. The only thing that he could do was to berate Lindiwe in public, reduce Ulindiwe, call her names and all kinds of labels, because that's just how he has a distasteful posture towards women leaders, right? So imagine me going to sit in such political, imagine me going to Rise Mzansi, sitting there and acting as though, no, we're an honest new political party that is not aligned. Who funds you? Who gives you money? Umthamo Semlonyeni comes from where? Because you can't chew if no one has given you the food.
You're touching on the issue of money. We're going to come back to it later, in as far as it affects independence.
All right.
But the is it not true that the public perception of politicians today, based on their lived experience, is that the politicians lie? They don't find it difficult to say thing today and say another and deny ever having said something, or spinning what they said yesterday to say, no, actually, that's not quite what I meant. You know, like, as in, you know, The people say, you know, we need to create jobs. And then they say, well, we'll create job opportunities. And
it's
then
the people come back and they
say, no, we didn't say job, we said opportunities.
Exactly.
You know, something amorphous like that.
Mm. No, it's not even a perception, Bramag, that it's a perception that politicians lie. They do lie. And I think over and above that, it's not even finding it. I don't know if there's something called dignity in lying. But if there was, they don't even lie with dignity, with some sort of dignity in it. They do it with a straight face about something that if you can now say, but this is what you said, they will find a lie to cover the lie that they said about the lie that they said, right?
Mm.
And those are the things that demonstrate to you that the rot in political parties, the party political hegemony in this country, whether tomorrow there can be a new political party, it's going to be infested by people that have been moved from one party to the other. So ultimately, the eventuality is that it's going to follow the same conventional trend of all political parties.
How do we change this trend?
The most important thing is that the citizenry vigilance is where it all starts and ends, Bramike. As citizens, we need to detach the love for Anele personally, as a person, and hold Anele into a high ethical standard. That if Anele fails that ethical standard, we must not be overwhelmed by the fact that I just love her. There mustn't be levels of acceptability of things that we have said.
I love the t-shirt.
Right.
That I'm looking at now.
Yes, my gorgeousness. Mm. I mean, yes. I'm sexy and all. You know, my gorgeousness should not blind a citizen to fail themselves. And failing themselves so much so that they let me off the hook. That's where it is. And that's where we must force ourselves to go to. I mean, do you think I'm happy when I'm going to have to speak about people that I've looked up to in the ANC? People that are, I mean, at some point, I wanted to emulate them so much in almost every single way, not just admiring them because they are women leaders, but admiring the, you know, the fierceness in them and that feisty that is required, you know. But when you, Abosis Nomvula, to now come to know later, Uguti, you get bribed and I'm a bribe packs. Like, honestly, I'm a bribe packs. I mean, from inspiring us to be people, to be young women in the ANC, who must know that you stand and stand firm, you stand and be unshaken, to now come back and erode all that inspiration that you have given to us. Do you even think, Tina, we are okay seeing disappointment, being disappointed by those people and finding no reference to say, this is where my political inspiration comes from.
Yeah, yeah. It's
painful to us as well to leave, to see our leaders having gone rogue and having gone into this state of just being, cheap to any highest bidder.
Yeah. Kora, here's the thing. I get you the whole point of being elected and being a public representative is that you must have the influence.
True.
To be able to change things for the better.
Yeah,
but it comes with numbers in parliament.
Yes.
These are the people you're going to have to work with.
Yes.
These leaders that we've just been talking about.
Yes.
You know, how are you going to traverse that? You know,
but
will there be people that you'll say, I will never work with so-and-so, I will never work with so-and-so, but maybe I can work with the other?
Firstly, I'm going to be working with the resources of the country,
mm-hmm.
which are not resources that belong to any political party.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I don't intend to entangle myself in any coalition agreement or any arrangement with any political party.
Mm.
I'm intending to be an objective thinker who is independently uncaptured, who applies logic and objectivity in how she approaches things in parliament. And I will use what is the best outcome that will serve the people of South Africa on every single approach that I go on to in attending to a matter in parliament.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe the issue that speaks on the numerical strength has got any basis in weakening the value of independent candidates. Mm-hmm. As much as we're going there as individuals ourselves, there is absolutely nothing about a number which is a numerically of an individual who is one that is lesser of a block that is either 200 or 300. Because as you say, it's a numbers game. Have you not seen Parliament where the ANC needed to cross maybe on a certain motion with one member and there would be no one, or with one vote? Mm-hmm. Has it not happened in our Parliament? It has. So if anything, one of the things that South Africans must understand, the independent candidates in this coming seventh administration of Parliament, we are not just game changers. We are the Perth pavers and Perth finders. We are the strategic shifting pillars of where the maturing of the democracy of South Africa is going to tilt towards. We are the ones who are going to set the agenda. And I'm telling you, I'm not saying this with arrogance. Political parties are going to be the ones that are going to be running after us. Mm. Not the other way around. I've got no intention of... I mean, I left all of them before I went to Parliament. Mm. Why would I go on such a critical strategic pedestal as an individual and then go to Parliament and chase political parties for what?
Let's talk about... You mentioned the issue of money earlier in our conversation.
Yeah.
Just briefly, if you can just share with us the challenges of being an independent, of campaigning as an independent, apart from the incident at the signing ceremony, at the pledge ceremony.
All right. Firstly, in getting resources, in the resource mobilization journey, firstly, people, in most cases, in my case, most people have told me, especially business people, they've told me that when an LEO can't be controlled, you listen to no one, which works against you. So there's no handler. There's no person that can be told, go speak to her. She must toe the line. You don't, you toe no one's line. And that is a risk for us because we don't know if, for instance, we give you money, when we then come and say, we are interested in 1, 2, 3, and 4, will you listen? That has been the first thing, which is good because that speaks on my integrity, which is my leverage. And I never want to get that tainted. Secondly, it has been people who have been saying that we do business in government through a political party of this and that. So if we give you money, what if it gets discovered that we gave you money? So it was the fear of being uncovered and maybe consequences, future consequences that they may then suffer, detrimental to their businesses. Third, it was how do we give you money as an untested, apparatus in the political space? Effectively doubting this notion of independent candidates and a whole lot of things. And I guess I would want to say the last one was more legit. It was more better. Not that it's legit, but it just it does talk to the fact that there hasn't been much public awareness and education of what did that constitutional court judgment meant when it allowed the standing of independent candidates to effectively simplify to say, no, this is effectively not even the expanding of our Electoral Act. It's just a review of the Electoral Act and expressing it in the manner that it is designed to fully apply what is enshrined in our Constitution, right? So those are challenges that I've faced, and I have had to humbly accept them and walk away. And it has been very funny. I was frustrating because as a result, my campaign has not received any resources, none whatsoever, except for my own resources and also from well-wishing people who have been responding to my social media campaign of 50 rand donation.
You've used a lot of social media.
Yes, I have. Mm. I have. And it has paid off. I mean, I think we've procured t-shirts. We've procured beautiful posters. Have you seen my posters?
No, I haven't.
Ah, lelela.
I should see one.
Listen.
Yeah.
Top quality. Mm. And I don't want to jealous.
I can see the t-shirt also is quite, yeah, quite
most deaf. Yeah, most deaf. And it's really through you know, assistance that comes from even people who most of them I don't even know. I mean, I remember I saw in one of the transfer to my account, it was 10,000 rand. The person didn't put their name, they didn't put their number, they simply said, "All the best, Anel." And that tells you there are people who genuinely sees the validity of the value that comes with the independent mm-hmm. candidate, mm-hmm. but also believes in Anel's leadership. And yeah. I think my leadership of the years has come to be my leverage at this moment. Mm-hmm. It's been my activism that has made yeah. my campaign to be well received by South Africans the way they have, mm-hmm. and to even be willing to part with their resources to add into my campaign so that it can be oiled and reach yeah. out yeah. and go everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Two quick ones because we're just about running out of time. Okay. Family, what did they say when you said you're standing as an independent?
Okay, the only person I told was my uncle, because family for me has been my grandmother.
Yeah, yeah.
My uncle was like, "Are you sure? That's a bold step, and I'm scared as you're saying it." And I said to him, "I am sure, and it's scary to me too, but that fear is not enough to stop me. I'm going ahead."
And you know the thing that says, feel the fear, but do it anyway.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. Yes. And obviously, symbolically, I went to my grandmother's grave and I told her. And I think when I was leaving her grave, for me to see a white feather falling on my shoulder was okay, because mm-hmm. I knew what she meant.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that the propelling motivation comes from that, but also it comes from the need to ensure that there is paying of respect to the people that paved the way for us to be here. You know, we have Umakuluwini who sleeps in her grave with a broken heart, you know, with a wounded body no one cared about. And it cannot be okay. Someone must stand up and say, for that generation, for those leaders, for those women, for those fallen women and fallen men and fallen young leaders, Bo Hector Peterson, Bo Solomon Mahlangu, someone must pay revenge. Not a revenge for pain, but a revenge to reclaim our country.
Okay. Anel Mda, we'd like to thank you very much for joining us and giving us your very interesting perspectives and to engage with you up close.
Thank you so much, like, Brahmai.
In your own words, as it were.
Yes.
Of course, Anel is standing as an independent candidate for a seat in the National Assembly in the coming elections. We really appreciate your time. I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, do stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.